Microsoft Webcast, you can go to microsoft.com/webcast. Thanks again for joining us on today's MSDN GeekSpeak Webcast, REST and Windows Azure Services Platform. Now it is my pleasure to introduce today's first presenter, Lynn Langett. Lynn, you have the floor.
Great. Thanks very much, Phil. Well, welcome, listeners of GeekSpeak. Today's edition continues our theme for the month of understanding the new development platform, Windows Azure. For those of you who are regular listeners to our weekly GeekSpeak show, you may have listened in last week to Aaron Sconard's overview and presentation of the Azure platform. If you missed that, we do recommend that you go ahead and listen to that, because we are drilling in a little bit more detail on this particular edition. So this week with me, I've got developer evangelist Lindsay Rutter from the East Coast. So I want to say hi, welcome to Lindsay, and ask her what's new and exciting out in Philly.
Really starting to get, oh, hi, Lynn. Sorry. Hi, everybody. It's great to be here again, especially with you, Lynn, since we did the Geek Speak with Aaron, and that was really exciting. So I feel like we get to follow up and ask some of the questions that have been stewing in our minds since then.
Yep.
It's a new year. We're starting to get the ball rolling. Lots of events out here, including the MSDN developer conferences. So if you're in the Washington, D.C. area or the New York City area, we will be having our MSDN developer conferences starting next week on the 16th. So if you want more information about that, go to msdndevcon.com, and we'd be happy to have you there. I'll be there, and come say hi.
Great, super. Yeah, we are rolling up lots and lots of events as well. I did a recent blog post on all the different types of events, whether live or online, that we are putting together about Windows Azure. For those of you who don't know, my blog can be found by just looking up SoCal DevGal, and we have all the links at the end of the show here. We have lots and lots of information, because it's a big nut to chew off. We've got four shows this month, and Lindsay and I were talking before, because we are getting ready to present on Azure ourselves, and we're learning along with you. So for those of you who haven't listened into a Geek Speak before, this is a different kind of format. It's not really a show and go. It's more of an interactive format. Now, for this particular GeekSpeak, we decided to do something really different, try new things in the new year. Our guest had so much information that he asked us, and we said he could show a few slides. So you guys can vote him down on the slides if there are too many slides, but we feel there are so many paradigm shifts and concepts that to just get you started developing without understanding why and what choices you might make might not be the responsible thing to do. In addition to that, we've got some hands-on labs that we're going to talk about that we'll make available to you. So our guest this week is a return speaker to GeekSpeak, Adnan Masood. He's a local MVP, user group leader, and fellow data mining guru. We get along great. So welcome, Adnan. How you doing?
And then how are you, Lynn?
Great, great. Well, we're really glad to have you. You and I hung out a bit at PDC. We were in some of the Azure sessions together, scratching our heads, going, So now we're going to share what we learned with our audience. Again, this show is question-driven, so even though we have information to share with you, at any time, if you wish to ask a question, please type it into the question queue, and Lindsay and I will field the questions for Adnan, because we're really here to answer the questions that you have. Adnan, before we get started, why don't you talk a little bit about your background, and so that the guests know who you are and where you come from.
My name is Adnan Masood. I've done the GeekSpeak talk before on the REST. I'm a local software developer, a technical lead. I work in financial institutions, so I mostly work on the middleware and scalable applications. That's supposed to be like really secure and really secure and things like that. So. Plus, I work on Microsoft Technologies, and working with computers is like getting paid to do a hobby. Was the FPDC development and was really excited to see Microsoft coming up with Windows Azure, the cloud computing paradigm, and I've been playing with it since then. I'm not an expert like Lynn is, or Ray Ozzie or Steve Moss. You can put them all in the same caliber. What I've learned, I would like to share with the community.
Great, super. Well, let's get started with our topic then. So Really, as I said in the introduction, in the previous Geek Speak with Aaron, we talked about from a high level what Azure was, but maybe not everybody listened in. So Adnan, do you want to give the elevator pitch out to the group of what is Azure and why developers would be interested, and you know, then start drilling into some of the details? So you can go ahead.
Sure. So as we know that Azure is essentially a cloud services operating system, Windows Azure, and which serves as a development, hosting, and management environment. So it essentially provides you an entire development fabric to build your applications in the cloud. Now, I believe some of these concepts have already been discussed in the previous webcast, and might overlap some of these. But I want to go into the concepts from a developer's perspective and how cloud computing paradigm differs from the traditional paradigm of development we do today, and how we are, as a developer, going to embrace it in terms of this change. As you can see, that the actual topic of the talk is REST, using REST, but our in-depth discussion of the REST would be done in the next webcast, because REST currently is implemented only in the storage area.
So Adnan, you know I have to ask this. People out there may not know what REST is and what REST stands for. So can you give just a real quick explanation of what is REST?
Okay. Well, REST stands for Representational Style Transfer. It's an architectural style. Actually, it came from a PhD dissertation. So maybe Lynn's PhD dissertation would have something which we will all use as well in data mining. But apart from that anecdote, it actually is a way of accessing the resources as URI. So if you can understand one thing for REST, it is that URIs are resources. So that's all the REST stands for. Now,
so to summarize, accessing some type of resource data, some type of data via a constructed URI is kind of a summary of REST.
That's kind of summary of REST, yeah.
Okay.
So now what it does, it actually allows you, so that's a good point that REST should be discussed and talk about how it is an architectural style and what it does. So for instance, today, briefly, if you go to, say, Amazon.com or Microsoft.com, and then you type in Microsoft.com/downloads, and then you have to type in a grid in there. It's a really long number which you don't remember, nobody else remembers. Wouldn't it be nice if I can just say Microsoft.com/downloads/VM for Visual Studio 2008 or something of that sort, which is search engine compliant, which is more search engine friendly, which is user friendly, and it's the whole concept of programmable web. When the URIs are friendly and they are resources and you can use them to plug in to do different things. That example wasn't too clear, so I'll give another one. It's just like, for example, if you go to Amazon.com and you're Amazon.com/books/ISBN, and then you type in the ISBN number and automatically brings you a book. So that is a programmable API which you can essentially use in your entire application for a web application. So this URI is not just for human beings, but it is also for the computer. So you can use it in your program to read the data from Amazon's website or any other service. So that allows you to do a lot of things in a very easy and manageable fashion. That is something that you are losing in the SOAP world. In SOAP world, things are, for lack of a better word, convoluted and difficult to understand in terms of, like, everything is a SOAP envelope and you have to dig and look into the SOAP envelope. And in REST world, things are URI centric, so it's easy to understand the contract. It's easy to understand because the URI is essentially your contract.
And because you're using HTTP verbs to, you know, access the resources, right?
That's correct. We use HTTP verbs, which is your put, your get, your delete, and your head. And those words actually allow you to do things that you will normally do. So roughly speaking, they actually equate directly with the CURD operation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the Azure team decided to use a SQL Server storage as their first REST-based service in Azure platform and not the actual computational service. Computational services still go through the traditional deployment paradigm, which is you build it, and we'll get into this in a bit. But the point is that the storage services are easier and more intuitive when you map it to the REST, and that's why they are actually being implemented using REST.
Great. Well, I see a question in the queue, a couple questions in the queue already. One from William here. He says, with SQL Azure, can I take my local installation of Microsoft Dynamics GP and back up the SQL database, restore it to SQL Azure, and update the connection string to have my database in the cloud? And I don't know, Adnan, if you don't want to take this one, I can take it because I've been working on this. So do you want to take it? Or?
No, definitely.
Okay. No. But this is a very common question. You know, how does data storage work? And in fact, we are going to have two entire upcoming shows on this. So this show, we want to focus a little bit more on creating the website and putting the application in the cloud. But, you know, hey, it's question driven. So the short answer is it is database-like storage in the cloud, but it is not SQL Server as we know it in the cloud. It uses SQL Server, but it is a different implementation of storage. And the reason is, it's optimized for replication and availability. And we're going to get into that actually in two webcasts. So the short answer, William, is no, okay? You can't just change the connection string and put it in the cloud, and that's not our intent. And you might say, well, that's what I want. And we're going to address how you might be interested in using SQL services in the cloud for archiving and other uses in two webcasts. So hopefully that answers that one.
Can I add just a little bit more to that?
Sure.
That if you take a look at, you know, PDC content and such, though it hasn't been fully announced yet or implemented as part of the CTP, there is going to be a Microsoft Dynamics piece to Windows Azure.
Yes.
And so, of course, they're going to make the Azure version of Dynamics compatible with, you know, Dynamics as you know it. So, you know, just stay tuned for kind of how those pieces are going to work together. It just hasn't been announced to the public yet. That, you know, a bit at a time. It's still in CTP, so.
That's a great point. Well, I think we're going to turn it back to Adnan here to talk about this architecture, because although some of you are somewhat experienced with Azure, we assume that most of you probably aren't. So we don't want to skip too far ahead. We will get all these questions answered, but let's make sure we kind of understand the basics. So go ahead, Adnan.
Okay, so thanks, Lynn. For the Azure Services platform, this is a diagram usually shown, as you can see in your screen. Why we needed REST is because of the red box we have on the right. I'm sure everybody can see it. It is coming soon for Python, for PHP, and other related technologies. Now, REST is basically technology agnostic, just like SOAP is. However, REST is more. More in the sense that it's much easier, and ease of development and ease of deployment is the mantra now that Microsoft development team has been promoting. And what they want to do is to allow people to develop applications for the cloud with ease and from any other platform, and use Microsoft data centers and the cloud environment to deploy and test and use their application. So that's what they are aiming for. You know? And if they are aiming for it, they can't definitely go for a proprietary protocol. So they have to use something which is interoperable and which is easy for developers to use. Now, as you know, that Amazon.com, there was a recent O'Reilly interview in which the Amazon.com lead developers talked, and they said that over 75% of their API usage is REST-based. You know, Live Services, I don't know how many of you use it, but Live Services offer all the REST-based API. There's a wide variety of REST being used today in different applications. My previous webcast was about REST. So if you want to see further detail on how to build your first REST-based application in WCF, which is supported in WCF 3.5, I may refer you to that, and you can take a look at it for further details about how to build it. But REST allows you to develop these things, and it really fits well. I can't emphasize more, but really fits well with a cloud computing platform. And the reason is that when you're building REST-based applications, you think stateless. So you think that your requests are atomic, and they are for the resources, and they are not into complex transactions, and they have all the capabilities which are for RESTful environment or our stateless environment. So if I say REST equals to stateless, it probably not be exactly accurate for the rest of islands, but it is a high REST statement. And this is what it promotes. That's why the REST promotes the cloud computing paradigm. When you actually have a distributed set of servers available, which are the state is maintained by you in the storage arena of SQL Server storage services, and you are actually deploying the computation capabilities like your services or your applications as a web worker or the worker role, and that's how it gets deployed.
Hey, Adam, we have a couple questions in the queue, and while we're taking them, why don't you switch over to the hands-on lab document and scroll to the screens where you're setting up the development environment for those who aren't familiar, because this question relates to it. So the question is from Andre. He says, he goes out to the Azure Services Developer Portal page, which for those of you listening is how you get started as an Azure developer. And you go to the URL, and then you want to set up these abilities to host either your application and or use Azure Data Storage up in the cloud, and then you create a project. So I don't know if you have a screen in this hands-on lab showing that or not. And in order to do that, you have to sign up because we are in beta right now. And what will happen is you will receive a token. Now, there are different kinds of tokens because there are different kinds of services that are available. And one set of services, and this relates specifically to Andrew's question, is the live services. So there's a type of token that you can get participating in the beta that allows you to work with live services, which is a set of services that sits on top of basic Azure. So his question is, my Azure Services Developer Portal page has only live services with 20 projects remaining. And he doesn't have access to the hosted services or to the Azure Data Storage. And the reason for that is you have to apply to that beta separately. And the reason that we're doing that is because this is new. It was released at PDC, and we're building out the data center capacity. So we want to make sure that we can handle the anticipated load as we bring more people into the beta. So it's been a real big point of confusion with developers. And you go to that Azure Services page, and we'll put the links in the post-show resources. You request for the token, and then you have to get a token that allows you to set this up. Now, fortunately, even if you're still waiting for your token, what you can do is you can download the Azure Services SDK and the template add-ins for Visual Studio, and those include the ability to develop locally and to take a look at how your data and or your application will work up in the cloud. There's some tools included. So it's been a big, big point of confusion. So in other words, if you download those two pieces, the SDK and the template, you can get started while you're waiting for your token. So hopefully that answers Andre's question. I'm glad that you asked it because we get that quite frequently.
Let me add a little bit to it. It's like you should have been to VDC then. you get like currently when I log in, I get 20 live projects like you do, and there's a SQL Services storage project, which is like two of them you get, and there's computational projects, which is two of them you get. So it depends on the participation and signing up separately for that, like Liam said. So you can sign up separately, and that will allow you to upload your projects, your computational project, create them, and deploy them. And regarding the development fabric, if you look at the page number 7 in the Building Azure Services Lab, you can pretty much do everything which you will be able to do on the cloud other than the deployment part. So you will be able to test it in the development fabric. The development fabric is really good. It's like an environment. It's a cloud, local cloud, for testing purposes or for development purposes. So you can actually check it. You can even test load balancing things. Like you can have multiple, span it across multiple machines and then say, okay, these are the CPUs which are going to handle it. And you can set a lot of different parameters. It's a really rich system available.
Right. And just to be very, very clear with our audience, currently to deploy an application to the cloud, it has to be a .NET-based application. We have announced plans to support other types of applications, native code and things like that in the future. But currently, we only support native applications. There's two different project types. There's a hosted service, and there's Azure Data. You don't have to use a hosted project to use Azure Data Storage. So you can have a local project or a project that's hosted on a normal web server or whatever, and then store the data for that project in Azure, or you can store both the application and the data in Azure. That's an architectural choice that you make. And again, we're really wanting to make this as clear as possible because, again, we all three struggled with this, and we're trying to share with all of you the types of projects that you can create. So once you get started, Adnan, do you have a screen showing in Visual Studio what the templates look like?
I do. So if you look over here, then you open up and you do file new template after you have installed the Azure SDK, which I'll show on the slide shortly. After you install it, you will see a new template available.
Yeah, so if you take a look, everybody, you can see that you have the web and worker cloud service, the web cloud, and the worker cloud. So this is another really common point of confusion for developers. And then can you talk a little bit about what's a web role and what's a worker role and when you would use which one?
Okay, so, well, the easiest way to understand it would be probably to say if you are doing a services-style development, for instance, not really a Windows application because you are actually running services in the cloud. If you have the local accessibility or talking to the storage and doing local, which would be analogous to today's services, like Windows services, then you want to use the worker role. Web role is essentially, think about it as you are deploying it on a shared hosting server or a hosting server where you have multiple people accessing it. And there is limitations and certain aspects of what you can and cannot do in these roles. For example, one of them is inbound requests. So you can accept inbound requests if you have a web role, and you can serve the corresponding content on the web role. It's just like deploying your website to the cloud, and it's different paradigm as compared to the traditional web deployment paradigm, but it's essentially analogous to how you would do it. Does it explain what you're looking
right.
for?
Right. So you can create a project that is just a web role, which is like a UI, basically, that connects somewhere, or you can have a worker project, which does some sort of business logic, if you will, or you can have both, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure.
And you can host one or both in the cloud, and you can scale them. Do you have a screen showing the config roles and how it scales?
I do. The problem is I can't really see them in here. It appears blank on my screen.
Okay. Well, right now, if the audience looks at the Solution Explorer, point number 6, the service configuration.cfg and the service definition csdef. These are two new XML files that are part of a Azure project, and they allow for the service description and the service configuration. Yeah, you can see the service configuration is being highlighted. And literally, this is one of the reasons why you might be interested in Azure, because to scale either the web or the worker, you simply just change the number of instances, and that literally will allocate additional VMs and additional CPUs to your application by just changing a configuration file. And you can do that while it's live, actually.
In the slide number 26, on the page number 26, you can do an example of exercise of using a welfare service and how easy it is. So you just right-click on your computational the solution, and then you say add new worker or project, and then it will be just like a wizard. It will open a template for the worker role, and from there you can create a worker role project and deploy it.
Great. So we're getting a bunch of questions about security, and before we answer those, I think what we should do is, Adnan, can you show us the three types of Azure data storage, either in a slide or something, so the people that are watching can understand the three types of Azure data storage, and then we'll get into the security data questions that you guys are wanting.
I want to take 5 minutes to get the getting started thing, and I'll jump into the data storage.
Okay, great.
Okay, so let's see. like I said, I'm not going to spend more time on this because now we have all these questions, and I don't think we have time just because of philosophical explanation of the rest and why it is important. But this red box is why we need rest, and rest is really meant for this kind of infrastructure. Now, looking at this next slide, I can't see it, but I'm sure you can.
Yeah, we're on the starting point.
Okay, you're on the starting point over there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, for some reason it's not appearing on my screen. I'm sorry. Okay, I have to switch to my deck. And these are the links. You can download the slide deck from the website. Link will point you to. And the second one, which is alex.azure.microsoft.com, is just basically your entry point where you can enter your credentials and log in after you have signed up for the beta. And that will give you all the Azure entry point, which you will see in a screenshot a little bit later. Also, if you will look at the next slide, slide number 6, which is these are the actual video streams of the PDC sessions. So if you didn't go to PDC, you can actually look at them, and they actually talk about your first Windows Azure service, which is what the hands-on lab is all about. It talks about how you can build and deploy. And if you look at that webcast, it talks completely about how you can actually deploy the configuration file and the application package and go through this. When you go over hands-on lab, you will see what I mean by the application file and the configuration.
Right. And just to be clear for the audience, all these PDC videos are free for streaming. So, you know, the challenging thing about Azure is it's big, right? And we try to break it into little chunks, but it's big. And before we answer the data security questions, we have to give sort of a little bit of background. So keep going.
And further going, if you will see why we need cloud services, I think it has been answered in the previous one, so I won't go over that. And why hosting is difficult, and we all know that we don't want to manage our hosting servers, and it's better if a billion-dollar company with a major infrastructure is handling it for us, which most of us do today if we are not running our own data centers. So this is from a web developer, so a web application developer, from somebody who is developing applications for services to be used, SaaS, software as a service paradigm. That's an ideal to scale up and scale the application around. So there's one point I would like to emphasize, that there is a multifaceted aspect to the scalability of the application. So normally the example which is given is an e-commerce-based website. So you have an e-commerce-based website which is selling stuff on flowers. So for example, you're sending flowers, and during the holiday season, the flower sending will be going increased, so you can add as many sellers as you want in the cloud. That's a typical example which is given. But the other aspect of this is computability. For example, if you're doing a Netflix challenge or some kind of really expensive computational problem, and that's when you need the CPU cycles, you can use Azure Cloud Services for that as well. And that allows you to be able to do your computational tasks and also utilize the SQL Server data services aspect of the cloud. You can use the storage and all the other capabilities which it allows you to do. Live services you can use the actual workflow capabilities, you can use the service capabilities as well. So computationally it's very strong. It allows you to do all these things.
Okay, but again, to get to this core data question, within the Windows Azure platform itself, there is this capability to store data. And for those of our listeners who haven't really gotten familiar, do you have a slide or something that reflects the three different types of storage that's available within Windows Azure so that we can talk about the security?
Okay, let me switch to the SQL Data Services slide. It is slide number 22.
Yeah. Or you can just talk about it. Yeah, no, I see it right there. Right?
22.
Okay. If you go back, I saw it.
Oh, you saw it?
Yeah, go back. Right, back, one more.
This one.
We have lots of slides, but we told Adnan he couldn't show them all. That was good of us, huh? Back a little further. There, stop. We go forward.
Okay.
Number 11, go to 11. There, that one. So the three black boxes on the bottom where you talk about storage, what are the three types of storage? And then I'll have Lindsay kind of jump in and go on the security.
You mean the analytics capabilities and the reporting capabilities and the database capabilities?
No, I mean the core storage within Windows Azure itself. There are three types of storage.
Okay, do you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, so we've got blob storage, we've got queue storage, and we have table storage. So how I'm a developer, how does that work? How do I use which one, you know?
So I don't know how many of you are actually familiar with like Hadoop and S3 and other infrastructures for storage. The way storage today in the world was a relational model with relational schema, when Card wrote it, you know, it came from the famous Card paper. When he wrote that paper, he said the relational schema is not good for any particular problem, but it's a good foundation or good for a lot of other problems. Now, it's not perfect. Why it's not perfect? Because you need to store objects, retrieve objects, and when you are having the relational schema and you want to scale, it doesn't scale too well. So that's what is identified in a lot of these cloud computing platforms, including what Microsoft did over here, and then they allow you to use the table, the queue, and the actual blob storage. And blob storage is pretty much what I normally use for my application. It allows you to actually store an object. So you have an object, you can just serialize that object into the cloud, and that's where the REST capabilities come in, and then they allow you to actually serialize and put all the entire object you have in the cloud. It can be any type of object as long as serializable. It can be written over, and it gets serialized in the storage, and you can get it back just like local storage, like you would do in the SQL Server if you are using the block capabilities of the SQL Server. And on the contrary, you have the traditional table style structure, and you have actual queues which you can use for queuing mechanisms like IBMQ and MSNQ. What capabilities do they offer? Those capabilities you can also utilize using the SQL services. So far, I have not in depth looked into the actual storage services. I was really fascinated by the web application framework and the implementation of actual computability. Lynn might
That's be able okay. To we'll start. Be we'll be covering SQL services in the next couple of Geek Speaks. So Anna, we have a few questions in queue, and they all are basically asking the same thing. So now that we could have our application run in the cloud or services in the cloud, you know, with different roles that you're talking about supporting, what about security? Or more specifically, I mean, you have a few slides I saw there, but access control accessing your data and security around that, you know, authentication, authorization. And how does security work with Windows Azure? It's a really big concern with people because, you know, they're sending their data and they're not having it live locally. So how can they maintain some kind of control around that?
So the specific concern is about the application security, or is it around the data security?
I think everything. So I think we've got security concerns all over the place.
Okay.
Yeah. So why don't you start with data security, since that's what we're talking about right now, and then move on to you know, application security.
Okay, so the transport level security is, I believe, is there. I have not tested and tried it. I have not tested with HTTPS or other different protocols, but Lynn can speak to this if the transport, but from the PDC, what I got is the transport level security is available, and you can actually transfer data from like the point-to-point security versus end-to-end security. Now, end-to-end security, of course, you have it because you have the VCF on available. So what you can do is, if you want to secure your password, you can easily use any of the VCF security mechanisms, and you can encrypt your data in the password. And for instance, if I am having a service deployed on the cloud, which maintains my customer's social security numbers, and somebody's accessing it, I would like to put more secure controls around it. And working at the financial institution, I don't know if I actually will be using the SQL Server reporting services, SQL Server storage services to store my customer information, unless it's the PCI compliant and other things. I actually went up to a presenter at PDC and talked about the data centers and their security and the compliance aspects, like for example SOX compliance and PCI compliance. And they said they would be working towards that and allowing it. But for at this point, I believe that the storage is secure enough, but it will depend on what kind of compliance standards you are looking for. So,
okay, yeah, so I know that they're probably working towards some kind of compliance, but I think it also does have a lot of it to do with, you know, using the right tool for the right job. You don't need to move everything that you, you know, every piece of data that you have in your enterprise to the cloud. That's not what we're asking of this technology, right? It's just maybe doing, you know, using it appropriately. If you have very sensitive customer data that you, to be compliant and such, you need to have on the premises. Of course, you can adhere to that, but there, you know, there could be pieces that you could put in the cloud, like managing your zip code database or something like that. That it could be public information.
The cloud being in this paradigm of having the on-premises services or on in the cloud services, so you can mix and match. You can say what you want to have in the cloud versus what you would want to have in the on-premises. I'm sure at one point, as this is a really new technology, at one point it will get matured and we will be able to do this, store all the data in the cloud and not have to worry about maintaining our local data center. But at this point, I wouldn't bet on it.
Okay. What about application level security? You know, typically using some kind of .NET services for managing security and authentication and such to your application. How does that paradigm shift apply to cloud services?
So, well, you are familiar with the Geneva framework. I don't know. Lynn, is a talk going to be happening about the Geneva framework and access control?
Yeah, that's probably a broader topic that we want to take on here. I think from an application standpoint, it's important our developers know that there is a core level of code access security.
Yeah, this is where I was going with that.
Yeah, that is a standard. I think of it as analogous to what's been done in SharePoint, and I realize not everybody knows that, but what it is there's a core set of code access security permissions that have been decided that will be adequate, and it's called, I believe it's called Azure Application Security Set, or something like that, and it's basically a set of permissions that your application has to run with them, and it basically protects you from doing something really bad. But as Adnan appropriately said, this is, you know, very early beta technology, so we are going to be listening very closely to you, and you're going to be telling us we need stronger permissions, we need permissions that allow us to do more things. It's always balance and security, but I think it's important that you all understand that it's access control, code access permissions, which I find a lot of developers still really don't understand. That's been around for quite a while, but people just haven't got into it. So the best primer on that is writing secure code too, which I actually give out at many of my events. Really, obviously, got to have an understanding of that for the application. For the data, as Adnan said, I think the core skill set is a WCF security because of the endpoints. And again, I think that's very new for a lot of our developers still learning WCF, still moving to WCF. I think a great resource on that is my friend Michelle Rubus-Dumonte's book, Programming Learning WCF.
Learning WCF.
Yeah, and if you've already kind of worked with it a little bit, then her colleague Yuval Louie's book, I think it's Mastering WCF. They're both from O'Reilly. But getting those core skill sets, code access security around applications and WCF security, I think are really ways that you can get ready for understanding security for core Azure in the cloud. Now, SQL services security is different, as Lindsay said, and we're going to talk about that on a subsequent webcast. But you have to kind of start with the core. Another way to think about it is the data storage in Azure is kind of analogous to the data storage in a file system. So if you think of, you know, NTFS permissions or whatever, it's kind of analogous to that, although, of course, obviously we're accessing it across the Internet, so you've got this whole URI and WCF component. So WCF security strikes me as pretty important. Now, what Adnan was talking about with Geneva is federated identity, which is a whole kind of other thing that can sit on top. But some of you probably have interest in that. When putting your data to the cloud, you can write that, or we are actually coming out with a product called Geneva internally, which is a security token service, which does a claims translation. So we haven't scheduled a Geek Speak on that yet, but if you like one, let us know, and we'll get one going on that because it's a topic I'm really interested in. So it's really a multi-pronged answer, but I think the best way for you to start as developers is to get the basics, which is code access security and WCF security. And I'd be interested in what Lindsay and Adnan think, if they agree with me or not.
Totally. If you see, like, it actually provides you a whole access control service framework, which is I like to think of it as an open ID style thing, when you can actually communicate with the service.
Yeah, that has to do with one of the other questions that include, does Azure support open ID? So don't think of it, it isn't open ID, but federated identity, of which open ID is also a proponent. So,
okay.
Yeah. Right now, Azure supports Windows Live ID, which is an open ID identity provider.
Mm-hmm. So this is, from the web application perspective, your security permissions and everything is going to be similar to how you do it in IIS7, because basically in the IIS7 style deployment, you will have anonymous, or you can have security from an application perspective. Where you will store it, or if you are deploying a service, you can have security from a service perspective, when you can actually pass credentials in a header or as a security token and things like that. So you can have application level security because WCF is running just as it would run in any other platform, and you can do service level security. And you can also do security on the Windows application. I've never done it. I'm mostly, like I said, I'm a middleware person. So mostly my aspects are pertaining to service deployments and how I can deploy services and use the cloud infrastructure to do that. So I might not be the best person to answer the question regarding other type of security, but from a WCF security perspective, it allows you to do all the WCF binding type of security, which is available in the framework itself.
Which, you know, is pretty robust and supports a whole lot of stuff.
That's correct, yeah. The federated security is available. The federated security is in line with the cloud infrastructure. And moving on, I would like to really go quickly on the code part of it, because, of course, the Geek Speak is incomplete without
code. Yeah, it's
true. So let's go to slide number 32 before we don't have much time left. So you can see all these slides I made. Like Lynn said, I wouldn't be doing over half of that. So there's a web role, and then there's a worker role. So WebFarm, this is essentially how your web role works. So WebFarm is handling the request it's coming over, and that's your cloud. And it's communicating with the storage services, and your load balancer is the one which is handling all the incoming requests, and it's redirecting to the different instances of your ASP.NET application. As it scales up and down, depending on if you want to scale up and down, and it's like IIS7 hosted over there. And if you move to the worker role, how it is different is that it doesn't allow any inbound network connection. So that's what one of the fundamental differences I said earlier.
Right, and just to emphasize, because this is, I think, a really big point of confusion, because, you know, just like, can you move your SQL database directly to the cloud? No, is the short answer. Can you move your ASP.NET web application directly to the cloud? Probably not, is the short answer. A couple of things. They have to be stateless, and obviously our current ASP.NET applications do not include worker roles. So one of the things we need to figure out is if we want to have a worker role or not. I think that's actually a key question. When you're thinking about deploying an ASP.NET application to the cloud, you don't have to, but they can scale separately. That's sort of a key consideration. And as Adnan said, there is some security built in because there's a partitioning. No inbound network connections to the worker role. You can think of it as a kind of encapsulation, if I'm understanding correctly. They can write out, but no connections to the public. It only is connected to a web role, and they scale separately. Lindsay, you want to add anything about worker roles?
I was going to emphasize that point too, is it's working for you as the developer, working for your service, for your application, what have you. So therefore, you want it under your control, and exposing that to the public would be a pretty pretty bad idea, which is, you know, part of that abstraction for security reasons.
Right, and the other point about worker roles is they actually, you can almost think of them as like next-gen web services in a way, because they actually can communicate with different kinds of clients. So you could take a mobile client, or you could take a Vista, a desktop application, and you could put the worker role in the cloud. Now, I know that doesn't seem like very logical right off the bat, but maybe you had some rich client that did some sort of rich data visualization on your internal desktops, but it was your company was distributed around the world, so you wanted to put the worker up in the cloud as you grew divisions around the world. There's a business scenario for that, for example.
Yeah, and it makes sense for the using your a mobile phone or something like that, because we can only have so much power on the mobile device. I mean, they're getting pretty powerful nowadays, but still there's only so much power that they have. So having a worker role on a machine far away, you know, and being able to scale that is a very, very appetizing thought.
Yes, and I would like to add to that the computational part of it being coming from the scientific background, that worker role is really a good thing for, like, for example, if you want to run an extensive data mining algorithm on a storage service blob you have, and that has all the data in there, and you want to run it, and you want to store the results in the storage service, and it allows you to do that. And you don't want external visibility to it other than the results which come out, which can be accessed with the web role. So web role will give you like a reporting aspect of it or a web aspect of it. The worker role is the one which is actually crunching numbers, doing all the computational tasks. It's like a service which is running in there. So that kind of balances out your internal working computational work versus external facing websites. So let me jump into the real quick into the storage abstractions, which we talked about, the storage types, Lynn put it, so I was like, what storage types? But anyways, these are the three types of abstractions provided. And the thing is, when you're developing in the cloud, you need to think more towards having a heterogeneous type of system. So that's where the blobs come in. Let's not think about SQL Server. Let's think about data storage. Let's not think about a WinForm application or a Windows service. Let's think about a computational application, which is doing work. This is the kind of abstraction which Maxwell is trying to provide you to develop. Because, like I said, it's going to be in PTC 2009, they are saying they will have a PHP or Python or other applications running and supporting it. Currently, it's only managed code, but that's not it. The cloud is going to support everything, hopefully. Okay, so let's go back to the lab here.
So as Adnan is switching over, we want to remind everyone that we have a GeekSpeak blog on MSDN, and we will post this hands-on lab, which you can do if you're interested in getting your hands wet with this, and also Adnan's slides to both that blog and links to Adnan's blog as well as this recording. So if you want to share this out with any colleagues who are trying to get their head around Azure after we get done. We really are big believers in sharing, so anything we show is going to be available for you as well.
Definitely. We also, while he's switching around, we have a question in the queue. It's a pretty good one. It says, Azure is a hosted application environment, and the developer tools are there for building and testing your app. But are there plans to offer the Azure platform on Windows Server 2005, 2008, so that a company might host the apps locally? So that's basically kind of a sell it as an enterprise solution versus Microsoft hosting it. And you know what? There hasn't been, I have no idea. That hasn't been announced, nothing of the sort. Right now we're in month three of the CTP of Windows Azure. So it's still a baby. You can get your hands and play around with it, but it's still very young. So the full story of Azure is yet to be told, and we'll be learning more about it in the months to come. So stay tuned for things about that. Right now, there are no plans. Nothing has been announced to kind of sell a mini version of Azure to larger enterprises. But, yeah, so that was a really good question. But
so, this question usually comes up, like Windows Azure, when people think about Windows Azure, they're like, oh, this is something which I'll get on my DVD and I'll install on my data center and I'll can host services. So I asked the same question to one of the presenters at CDC, and they said there's no plans in place, and I cannot speak to Microsoft plans. You guys can probably do a better job with that. But at that point, there was no plan to actually allow it. It's more of the enterprise solution for Microsoft.
But we are early enough in that, you know, we want to make changes based on what you customers want. So because we hear that, I always ask people that send me requests to send them to me an email, linnl@microsoft.com, because we get them up to the product team. You are the customer, and, you know, we want to build things that you want. So I can't guarantee I can make the product team build this, but I can at least tell them that you want it. So, you know, great question, and this is one of the reasons that we try to have interactive presentations, because, you know, we're out there trying to build cloud services to be competitive with people who have already done so, and we want to provide you with the services that you're looking for, and I have heard this as well myself before, so great question.
Okay, so I have 6 minutes, and I still want to be friends with developers.
Be quiet, all right, go ahead.
They would be like, okay, you didn't show up any code, no more webcasts for you. Okay, so this is, I have uploaded all this code segment. Actually, I could have demonstrated it. It's a 60-minute lab, and I don't think we have time to cover the basics and everything. But so this lab is available. The PDF would be available. Actual source code of how to actually do it is available. You can try it out on your own. The virtual machine you can download. I have links available in the PowerPoint, and you can just try it out from there. It's really easy to actually start doing. And that's one of the things I would say. If you can take one thing from this presentation and say, why I'm not using Amazon S3 or Google App Engine, and why should I use the cloud service, is for you to see how easy it is to publish in the tools that you use, Visual Studio, and deploy it to the cloud. I mean, I'm sounding like an extra salesperson here, but it is true that it is really easy. And one of the demos that Don Boss did was really impressive. When he actually put a breakpoint in his local application, like in his local machine, and somebody hit an HTTP verb on a URL, he published a service on the cloud right in front of the 3,000 audience, and the breakpoint hit his application. This was through the WCF relaying messaging service. This is a totally different topic, but it's just so amazing that you can actually how closely it integrates with your application in the cloud, and none of the platforms out there currently supports anything nearly like this. So that's really impressive. Getting to this presentation, you can download all of this information. Let's go through this really quick and talk about creating or executing a first Windows Azure service. So how are you going to actually create it and then run it? So the steps of the construction were here. Let's go to the screenshot and see how you are going to do it. I'm having problems seeing it in my...
Yeah, the screenshot is fine. So it's basically showing the templates, and it's showing the Solution Explorer.
Okay. I'm looking at my local machine, and I can see the screenshot now. So as you can see, the highlighted one is Web Cloud Service. And the Web Cloud Service is one of the templates, the Visual Studio templates you get installed once you install the Windows Azure SDK. And you can create like a blank cloud service, then worker cloud service, which is a collaborative cloud service where you can have both the web and worker roles together. And then just a worker cloud service, which is going to be your worker. And you know the differences between these two. And you can create either one. So this is just as simple as template. So you have it created right there. And once you click OK, it's going to create the solution for you, and it has a role associated with it, and a CSFG file, which CSFG is essentially a configuration file, and you can modify the configuration on the fly, and it changes the properties over there. Now, the actual web role is a .NET application project, just like any other application project. So you can, it has all the information which you need. It has been modified to work with Windows Azure, but it's first going to work with your Fabric. What is Fabric? Fabric is your development environment where you actually first test your application before you upload it to the cloud. Okay, so moving on, let's look at the actual page. It will be in the next slide, if I can ever see it.
There you go.
Okay, page 7, okay. this is, you know, I want to see the one before so I can show the page, but there is nothing magical in the page. It's essentially the same as...
There you go. It's on page 6, that they can see it now.
Okay.
See the ASP.NET page with the page directive at the top.
Yes. So if you scroll down, there's the default ASP.NET, like you will create, you will just simple Hello World application you are building here.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how a page would be. There is nothing special about this page other than just that it is now going to be published in the cloud. One of the things is that the configuration file, it lets you, the service configuration CSFG file lets you set the values for the configuration settings and how many instances which you want to run for a role and how many instances you want to start. Now, when you press F5, it tells you if you want to show development, the Fabric UI, or shutdown, which you don't want to do. So you want to essentially show the development Fabric UI, which is this cool IDE. So I think I'm on page 7 now. So if you scroll down to page 7,
mm-hmm.
you see this. Once you press F5, you will see these things, and it opens up this Fabric UI for you, which is essentially an MMC control, management console, which has integrated parts for simulation of a cloud. So it allows you to do this simulation of your application and publish it over there.
Yeah, and for each, the little black box you can see for each instance that you have running, you'll have multiple views of that. So you can see in the fabric simulated how your application or what have you is going to run in the cloud. I think that's a great feature.
That is correct. And then you have the URI associated with it, which you can access and see that application running in there in the MMC. It says over here, role state started, and that's just a basic first application you would use. If you are happy with this application, what you would do is you will actually do a publish, and the publish will allow you to have two different files, and those files will actually get published on the server that you can upload then to the cloud platform.
Okay, well, we're just about time, so thank you, Adnan, for all the input, for your expertise about Windows Azure and how to get started. Lynn, I'll hand it over to you to wrap things up.
Great, great. Well, this happens every time with GeekSpeak, and particularly with Azure, because it's such a huge topic. Thanks, audience, for listening in. And like you said, all the information, the PDF and the slides, will be posted to the GeekSpeak blog. We'll post the recording to MSDN as well as Channel 9. You see Lindsay's blog there, my blog, Adnan's blog as well. And we have an entire series this month on Azure. We have a post on my blog with a bunch of different Azure resources, whether they're webcasts or live events. Both Lindsay and I will be presenting live events starting next month. And, you know, really thanks to Adnan. It's tough to present on a new technology. Great job. We were glad to have you on. And I'm going to turn it back over to our webcast producer. And if you have any other questions, be sure to put them in the queue and we'll get them answered. Thanks for listening, everybody, and tune in next week.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks, Lynn, and thanks, Lindsay. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us today. And I would like to let you know that there is now a survey slide posted in your slide area. If you could please take a moment to fill that out prior to logging off today, simply follow the link with which you registered, whether that was online or via some other means. And please take a moment to fill that out, as that information is very important to us. With that, I would like to extend a special thanks to our presenters today, Adnan Masood, Lynn Liggett, and Lindsay Rutter, for today's presentation. Thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect from the audio portion of today's web conference.